More with John Harry Charan as we talk about the metaphysics of money. And John, at the end of the last module, you were telling a story about someone who bought your product, the Power Pause, and they wanted a refund, and someone who just got it, looked at it, and they wanted a refund. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I didn't think it was strange. I just thought this person was so filled, absolutely filled with fear, that he thought all he has to do was to buy this little PDF file, buy this book, and maybe read it once, and all his problems would disappear. Now, we are asked to use our brains, our thinking, our logic, our senses in this world. We just didn't come here with an empty basket. We have all the tools in our toolbox that we need to do things. But every once in a while, we've got to think a little. And I think thinking is a little difficult these days because most people have their thinking done for them because of the noise in our world, the incessant clamoring, chattering of television and radio and all kinds of things. I'm not saying those are bad things. They're not. It's we have to decide how we use them, or else we will interrupt ourselves and we won't have patience to see the seed grow. Now, what this person didn't realize who had bought that thing was that he had to do something. He had to think about things, just like in business. Anybody who starts a business doesn't start the business tomorrow and expect it the next day to really, really do very well. Maybe there are cases like that, but I know one or two of them, but I don't know many at all. We're asked to think a little. And talking about business, here's a story where somebody didn't think. There are these two brothers. They decided to go into business for themselves. So they bought an old truck, and they noticed people are buying watermelons on one side of town, and they're selling. So they thought they'll go into the watermelon business. So they drove every day over to the other side of town, filled up the truck with watermelons, come over back to the other side where they lived, sold the watermelons. They paid $1 per watermelon and came back, sold them for $1 each. Well, you know, that doesn't work. You can't buy a watermelon for $1 and sell it for $1 if you expect to have a thriving watermelon business. After a few days, the one brother said to the other, "Something's wrong. We aren't making any money." And the other one said, "Yeah, we gotta find out what we're doing wrong." And so the first brother says, "Ah, I got it. We gotta buy a bigger truck." Now, when you think of that, that's the type of reasoning which a kid would do. So we have to think, but only under fear or worry that we think like that. You know? You got to do something, and you got to think about doing something. And in that line, doing something is so important in being able to earn wealth, money. It's like the guy, it's a mindset to start with. It's like the guy from Texas once said. He said, "Many times I have been broke, but never have I been poor." You see, the reason for that is broke is a temporary situation. Today, we know of many millionaires, many successful people who have declared bankruptcy 2 to 3 times. We know many people who have always had barely enough to live on, and yet the difference between the two is that one has no limitations on what he is thinking. He thinks clearly. He is not that scared because he knows that this is a universe where he can always make it. Whereas the other one, the other kind of people think, "I barely have enough. I barely have enough. I've got to be so careful how I spend it. So I'm going to keep most of what I have and only spend what is naturally just absolutely necessary." And that's one of the thinking too. Now, it's not bad to spend when it's necessary or spend a little bit more, but it's a psychological thing. I read once where somebody says, "You know, one of the ways to start causing the flow of this money, this affluence, this wealth, is when you're going out, if you only have 20 cents in your pocketbook and you see something that costs 19 cents or 22 cents, and you really, really want it, get it if you can trust that somehow or the other, the universe will give it to you, give you the means to pay for it, or get you two or three of those things. You've got to trust. You've got to think. You've got to believe. These are the things that we don't get into when we talk about money. We throw up the spreadsheet and we sell, say, if we sell six widgets, we will make X amount of dollars. And then if we can improve it this way and if we pay this much, that is great. That's wonderful analysis. And that's what those two brothers with a watermelon truck should have done. Instead of thinking they needed a bigger truck, they should have looked at the numbers. But that's not all. Below the numbers is another part of ourselves, which, for want of better words, I'll call it the higher self, that knows the way, that will show you the way. If you are quiet and you listen to it and you do something and you practice, and you realize that when you're broke, it doesn't mean you're poor, because broke is a temporary situation, as I said, but poor is a permanent situation. So if you think we just poor folks, as they say down here where I am, or I am poor, my parents were poor, I was born poor, I've struggled all my life, I'm poor, you are writing messages on the tracks of your subconscious. So it plays it back and says, John keeps saying he's poor, he isn't poor, he is like everybody else, he can have whatever he has. But number one, he doesn't believe that, so he better look at his belief system. It's not for us to teach him beliefs, it is for us, let's say, the subconscious is made up of a whole bunch of gift givers, little boys and little girls producing for you whatever it is you need. So they say, we don't know why he wants to think he's poor, but if that's what he wants, who are we to argue with it? And you meet experiences that show you at every turn that you're poor. The next thing is you don't deserve. Remember, we talked in the last session about Foster Hibbert and his commentary on guilt and why guilt is one of the primary causes of being poor, because you're saying to yourself, I don't deserve this, I don't deserve that. So the subconscious hears you, and then guess what? Your experiences fall in line with you don't deserve, and you don't, and you feel guilty. My thought is, if you're guilty, you know, get forgiven and move on. There's a story told about, being guilty, all of us go through that. But when you look at it carefully, here is something that frees me from guilt all the time. When we look back, we will say to ourselves, the reason I did that was it seemed like a good thing to do at the time. If I knew then what I know now, I would have done it differently. So if you have guilt, get out of it so it doesn't keep you in the poorhouse, so to say, or prevent you from reaching your full potential. There was a cowboy in Arizona in the old cowboy days, and he and a bunch of his friends around lunchtime were riding by, and all of a sudden he jumped off his horse, took off all his clothes, and jumped into a cactus patch. Immediately after doing that, he jumped out, of course, and his friends looked at him and said, why in the world did you ever do such a stupid, idiotic thing? And he looked at them with those wide, innocent blue eyes and said, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. So go back to all the stupid things we've done, you've done, I've done, everybody else has done, and ask yourself, why did you do that? And the answer most times will have to be, you did it because that's who you were. That's what you were going to do. It did seem, even when you thought it was stupid, it seemed like a good idea as you were doing it, or you wouldn't have done it. And so, after you reason that, you get rid of guilt. And so you're free to go on and create the greatest amount of wealth. Don't only dream of wealth as something that if I had $10 million, I would pay off for the house, the kids would have better cars, and Aunt Tilly, of course, will help her because her social security doesn't make it possible for her to live well, and I'd do this and I'd do that. That's a nice thing to think that way, and you're very kind to do it, and we all have indulged in that. But what you have to do is know that $1 million, $10 million, $100,000, $20, it's all available depending on how you think. Now, another interesting thing is this. How big can you think? How large is your vision? Steve just told us a story about the fees he used to charge, and that's because he thought that's all that he deserved or could get. And as he expanded into higher and higher fees, nobody complained. In fact, he probably got more quality customers or clients. Well, the same thing happens. We don't have to worry how this comes about. We don't have to think about how we're going to do it. We actually don't have to do it. We just have to think it, get out of the way, feel it, and it comes to us. Because it's just as easy to create, think of it, a $50 bill or a $100 bill, or a $2 bill, they probably use basically, I don't know much about this, I'm guessing, they probably use basically the same type of paper, the same printing process, the same everything, whether it's 100 or it's 10. What is the difference in them, the number that's written on them? If 10 is written on that bill, it means it's a $10 bill. It can only buy 10 widgets at a dollar each. If 100 is written on it, it means it's a $100 bill. The paper might be the same. It's not what it's printed on. It's an energy system. And it comes to us sometimes in mysterious ways. Here were these two guys that went into church again. I like church jokes. But this isn't a joke. It's also a lesson. And the one was wearing, you know, old clothes and tattered vest, and his shoes had holes. And he started praying. He says, you know, God, please send me $20. Please, I need $20 so I can buy this thing for my son, my little son, and get some extra food. Please send me $20. And next to him is standing this other guy who is dressed beautifully in a lovely suit and tie. He looks like he's a very important man. And he is praying to God, dear God, I need $1 million by next Friday, or else I'm going to lose my business and everything I've worked so hard for. Could you please make a way for me to find someone to lend me, where I could borrow this money or something? How can I get it? Please, God, please. And the other guy next to him kept praying, please, Lord, I just need $20, $20 alone. Well, I want to show you how God answers prayers at times, or how funny the universe could work. All of a sudden, the wealthy guy, or the seemingly well-dressed guy, stop praying, and he looks at the next shabby guy next to him who was praying for $20. You know what this guy who wanted $1 million did? He put his hand in his pocket, pulled out $100 bill, handed it to that guy, to the poor guy who only asked for 20, and said, hey, take this, get out of here, stop bothering God for that junk. To one guy, $20 was like junk. You don't ask God for $20. He was praying for $1 million. For the other guy, $20 was his whole life. Guess what? He got 100, five times what he asked for, because of the mysteries of the universe and the way money and wealth flow to us. The other guy, I don't know if he ever got his $1 million, but he probably did too when he got back to the office. His secretary says, you had a call from so-and-so, you remember? You were trying to get that loan for $1 million. They said it was approved. So you see, this is how the world and the universe work, in strange ways.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you interpreting those strange ways for us, John, because this is making perfect sense to me. And I really appreciate the way you just bring it down to earth for us. So thank you so much for that. You know, one of the things I'm reminded of as you're talking is the way that I used to perceive $1,000. And maybe if the people listening right now would just think of $1,000 and think about what you think of $1,000. You know, when I was a kid, $1,000 may as well be a zillion dollars, because my dad made me have a savings account when I was a kid, but I had, you know, like $30 or so, something like that. So $1,000, that's what grown-ups have. And so over the years, I've thought of $1,000 differently. You know, is it a mortgage payment? Is it a car payment? Is it a bunch of money? Is it part of something that would be, that if you got a few thousand together, it would be something? So the way I've thought about $1,000 has changed. And I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, about how vital it is that we look at money amounts in a certain way, because if we've been making X amount of money per year and we think X amount of money is a lot, then if we define that as a lot, whatever it is, then anything beyond that seems excessive. So we have to redefine the way we define a lot. So can you talk about that, John?
Yes, absolutely. We just have to expand our vision. We just have to expand our boundaries. And we have to just know that we are worthy of all good things. We are the ones who prevent them from coming to us, because I think the laws are very simple. As you think, so you shall become. If you think it with feeling, as you believe, so it will be. I mean, I grew up as a little boy. Even at 3 years old, I heard my dad saying to me, "Son, as you think and believe, so it shall be." And as I grew up a little bit, became a little boy and got into my teenage years, I'd wonder, what was he talking about? Who cares about believing and thinking when there are so many other beautiful things to do? But because of those words in my head at the earliest of ages, a magic started working, because it meant that I am the one in charge of thinking of how much I want. You're right. When you were a little guy, like for the entire year, let's say you had $30 in your savings account, and you look at it and say, $30, I want to spend it, but my dad will kill me, or just be say, no, put more in, save more. And then you start looking at it, and you got a little older, and now you can save $100. And the thing about it is, we get to a point and we get to be adults, and we stop dreaming, we stop being spontaneous, we stop living in fairy tales. How many times you hear people say to you, "Get real, man," or I've heard this, I grimace. But every time I hear them say, "You got to get a reality check," to somebody, I think, what is a reality check? A reality check, sometimes when you say that, you're working on judgment that belongs only to you. If somebody says he saw somebody walking in water, you'd probably say, "You got a great imagination," because in your reality system or belief system, you couldn't accept that. So it is with this money thing. We should expand the boundaries and think differently. I love the Apple ad that they had many years ago, which says, "Think different." Not much. You don't have to change your whole life by changing everything you think of. In fact, many people encounter failure because they try to make too many large changes at one time. You see, trying to break every habit pattern in a period of a day or two will be very traumatic to the system, and you'll give up. So what you do, you try to work on things a little at a time. If you look around and you see, check your account at the bank, and these days we do that electronically, and it shows that you have $342 and you need to spend $360 in a few days, why don't you just look at it and do another thing? Bless it. And you might say, "John, you've lost it. I mean, you are a best-selling author and you teach people things, and you're telling me to bless the lack?" No. The word bless comes from a meaning, has another meaning, to confer prosperity on. And if I don't say anything that makes sense, I can give you one thing from my experience. I too, like many others, have come to a point, like the guy in the church who needed $1 million, or the other one who needed only 20, and you sit back and I say, "This is terrible. I don't know how I'll make it through. The car has to be paid for. The house has to be paid for." We all have gotten to that point once in a while. Very few have not. And then you start saying, "Now, how am I going to do this?" And you go to bed and you're sleepless, and you take it to bed with you, trying to figure it out, not realizing that it is already figured out for you if you open yourself to the ideas. You see, friends, what we need isn't money. What we need are ideas, and ideas come when we least expect them. And the only thing standing between you and all the wealth in the world, or all the wealth in your town, or in your little, wherever it is you live, is one idea. And all you've got to do is get ideas. Look at Steve Jobs. One idea, a little work, a lot of hard work and everything, and one of the largest tech companies in the world. Look at Microsoft, an idea. Look at what people are doing, just an idea. And so you want to be rich? make it possible for ideas to come into your mind. And somebody once asked, where do ideas come from? And I think I mentioned the shower fairy and the walk fairy and the idea fairy. They come at strange times, but you've got to be prepared to listen to them, to hear them, and to put them into action, to do something. You know, you got. It's like the idea comes to you in a raw fashion. Like here it is. Here's an idea, and you look at it. Ah, I can't do that. You've just blown it. But if you look at it and turn it around and think about it and let it be, look at it again. All of a sudden, you'll feel movements within your mind to do this with it, to do that with it. That's how the Power Pause was written, by the way. It was written because a friend says, you know, can you write a little book that's about 100 pages that will tell everything you know about how to solve problems? And I said, jokingly to this friend, whose name, by the way, is Butch James, one of the people who know you, who is friends to some of the richest people on earth, but says, can you do that? They'll tell everything you know in 100-something pages. And I said, oh, that's simple. I could do that in 2 minutes on half a page, everything I know, right? He smiled, and I was visiting him up north. I came back home down south here, and I thought about it. You know, that's a good idea. A short book, but that would tell the most important things that I know. And then one day I started writing it, and that's how that book appeared. Now, I could have laughed at it, could have gotten rid of the idea, could have said, nah, can't do that. But no, you do something with it. You do something with what you've got. The fortunate thing is that you have everything you need to do something, but you can't just watch it. You know, there's this old Midwest farmer. He's walking through a rugged part of the Midwest, working in a little part of the Midwest there in his farm, and a preacher comes by. Now, all around, you know, there are bushes and rocks and stones and everything else, but right in the middle of all this is this beautiful little farm that this farmer is working on. And he's working along, and he is humming or singing to himself and wiping the sweat off his forehead. And the preacher notices this, and he comes up to the fence, and he looks at the farmer. He said, brother, what a beautiful, wonderful farm the good Lord gave to you. The farmer looked up and said, Reverend, you should have seen it when the good Lord had it. That's what ideas and things are like. The idea might be rough, but you got to work on it. The plan might be rough, but you got to work on it, and you got to believe in it, and you got to trust yourself, and you got to trust the force that brought you here. You didn't appear by yourself here. You were brought here, and you're being taken care of by a very loving force. So the more you worry about money, the more you push it away from you. The less you worry about it, the more it comes up to you, because it's curious to see what happened to you. And the more you sort of know that you deserve that and everything else, you will find that you always got it. I don't, you know, before getting into doing all these things, I worked for corporations, Fortune 500 companies and smaller ones, and I don't remember any time ever having to ask for a raise, because I was called in sometimes 3 months, sometimes 6 months, and I was told, you know, we think you're doing a fantastic job, so we are going to give you a 10% raise, which was way beyond normal. And then for no reason I'd be given raises. The only time I ever, in fun, as a joke, mentioned a raise was in New York to my boss. I had just finished my MBA, was working for this Fortune 500 billion-dollar company, and I came to him. I said, hey, boss, I just got my MBA. Am I not supposed to get a giant raise? And he looked at me and he laughed. He says, you're making much more than an MBA right now. And I thought, oops, I already got beyond that, but I never had to, because I always assumed that I was doing a fantastic job. I was giving much, much more than I was being paid to give. And so it was noticed, not by any one specific person that I thought should notice it, but by the universe, by somebody else who mentioned, who's that young man you've got out there? Oh, by the way, I was young in those days. And somebody said, oh, yeah, that's the fellow who works in that divisions. He is sharp. What are we doing with him? Oh, he does a great job. His departments are always running well. You know, I'd like to talk with him one of these days. And there's another raise. There's another promotion, and so forth. You have to assume that you're worthy of it. Now, what would it have been like if I had been working for this company? I kept thinking, they will never give me a raise. I don't deserve a raise. Well, the economy is really bad, and so they've cut back on everything. You know what? The economy works against you when you believe what it's saying to you that it's bad, because it's not really saying that. It's asking you. It's saying, hey, Steve, hey, John, what do you think about me? Now, if you listen to enough news, you'd want to die, because look at all the jobs that have gone. Look at the unemployment. Look at what's happening here and there. And the economy looks and you say, well, that's what you want. That's what you're going to get. But if you say, yeah, I know, change the way you say it. People are thinking that things are really rough, but I think things are okay. And change it a little at a time, just a little at a time.
I think that's very well put, John. And I look forward to learning more about changing a little bit at a time and learning more about how we can restructure the landscape of our subconscious minds. I think so much of this depends on how we go into a situation, what we bring into it, and what we take from the environment, what we make of it. And that, of course, affects us from that point forward.
It is a marvelous, funny, beautiful, sad, happy thing. Because all we're really dealing with, Steve, are beliefs, strong beliefs, beliefs of unworthiness or being worthy, belief about I can or I can't. Remember the story about the little train? I think I can, I think I can. And you go on to say, you know I can. Look at athletes, the ones who are most successful. They know they can. One of the people I got to meet over the years was a legend. Some of you know him as Muhammad Ali, the champ. And in some of our conversations, we talk about these things. He's got a fantastic, or at least he had a fantastic sense of humor. But when you talk with him, and he explains, he's a very gentle person, even though he was in a very kind of a sport that hurt other people. Boxers do that, and other people do that too. And you will see out of his gentleness, he will tell you, he says, I always believe in myself. If you don't believe in yourself, nobody will believe in you. The world would not believe in you, but the world stands powerless in front of somebody who believes in himself, and his mission. And that's what we've got to work on. Not on the money as much as what do I believe about the money? Why am I not getting enough of it? It's because I don't believe I deserve a lot of it, or because I think or believe that it's hard to get. And yet, there's John Doe across the street. He doesn't have that problem. He probably has another problem, which is, I never have any good relationships. But he makes a lot of money, but poor relationships. And there are those who have great relationships, lots of money, no health. You see, it's the same force and the same power that bring it all to us.
That's very well put, John. And I look forward to learning even more about that as we continue to talk about the metaphysics of money.